I'm Sayer, and I love Marvel.
And I'm Kaylee, and I love someone who loves Marvel. In season one, we watched through all of the Infinity Saga in release order.
For Kaylee's first time.
And Sayer's 85th.
Now for season two, we're watching phase four, both of us with fresh eyes.
Sayer as a super fan.
And Kaylee as a new per fan.
No, got that.
Welcome to MCU.
And me! Okay, we got it. In this episode, we're talking about 2021's What If? Episodes 1, 2, and 3. And here's your spoiler warning.
I don't know if a regular summary format will work for this.
Well, we can just recap, because we just watched episodes 1, 2, and 3 of What If?
Yeah.
So episode 1 was What If Peggy took the super soldier serum instead of Steve and became basically Captain America, but she's Captain Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 2 was What If T'Challa was a Star-Lord? And then episode 3 was What If all the Avengers died and Nick Fury had to team up with Loki?
Yeah, that was a strange one, but also it was my favorite of the three.
Huh. Why was this made?
So the What If comic book line has been around for a while, and it's basically just a thought experiment for different writers to explore what if certain events didn't happen like they did in what we know to be the existing comic book world of Marvel. And so they decided to turn that into a TV show. Now that Loki has kind of broken the multiverse thing, they thought, oh, well, this is a good time to get into that then, because the multiverse is exploring all these different possibilities of realities. So this kind of ties into that.
It's a pretty deep cut. I was thinking in the first episode with Captain Carter, I was going, I think I could maybe follow this one if I'd never seen any of the existing Marvel content.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 2, no way.
Yeah, episode 2 was a whole bunch of fan service nonsense.
Yeah, and then episode 3, again, I think I would have been pretty lost at the end being like, it's all Hank Pym. I would have been like, you introduced him in the last 3 minutes?
Right, yeah.
I mean, this is all for the fans, obviously. Who else are they making this for? But it is interesting to me, like, is it just people can't get enough Marvel content? It's like, just churning it out. I'm looking for like a deeper meaning when maybe there just isn't one. Maybe it's just supposed to be fun and an animated experiment. I just don't know what it adds yet. And we've only watched 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. For me, what it seems to be going at right now is just, we've broken open this multiverse theory. Let's explore that a little bit in a non-threatening to the overarching story going forward in the MCU proper. Non-threatening, I mean, it's not going to make a whole lot of changes to anything or introduce new concepts. It's just, okay, now we have this swimming pool. Let's play in the pool a little bit.
It's almost like with, you know, like Harry Potter or any huge franchise. Oh, there I go, bringing up Harry Potter again after so long. Did you miss it? It kind of feels like that, like people can't get enough and they're like, no, it's over. We miss our favorite characters. We want them back.
Yeah.
Which to me kind of feels a little bit threadbare. And if it's just for the fans, like it's just a love letter. Okay, that's fine. But I'm looking for a little bit more meat and maybe that's not what I'm going to find here.
That's a really good point that you bring up because that actually articulates something that I kind of feel myself just about Disney Plus in general. I, of course, appreciate knowing more about these characters, spending more time with these characters. They're so much fun and I love them. But at the same time, I am fine with the downtime between films. I don't need to constantly be entertained and have something new thrown at me. So that's kind of the danger territory that I feel in Disney Plus, is that they have the opportunity to just churn out TV shows and cartoons and things like this and Christmas specials and Halloween specials and all of these supplementary things that don't add anything meaty and heartful and real to the story. And that's fine to a degree.
And not everything needs to be deep and profound. It can also just be fun. And I gotta say, the animation is so luscious. It's really nice. Like it looks like comic book panels and comic book silhouettes. And like, I haven't read a lot of comics outside of Archie problematic, which I can appreciate. It feels kind of loyal to an aesthetic in a way.
Yeah, I like that they're being really stylistic with it. You know, the hard shading lines and the angles of faces and even people's hair, you know, the clumping of it all. Like, it's really beautiful to look at.
These are just little snacks, I think, to get us by.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe by the end of all 9 episodes, we'll go, I see why mm-hmm. this was necessary. But it's kind of like, you know, say like a theater company programs a whole season of shows and they run from September to June, something like that. They've got, you know, a couple main stage shows. And in between, they do just like readings of plays or like a couple lobby concerts or like bring in a lecturer on some topic to kind of fill it out. This show kind of feels like those little kind of filler programming.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
Because we've got Eternals coming up soon. So it's like, okay, we gave you a couple little snacks. Go and, you know, theorize on those things for a while and we'll come back and,
yeah,
you know, blow your socks off with some huge budget, brand new Marvel film. Oh, I was going to say, at first I was thinking, why is this animated? And then watching episode one, especially because I really liked the fighting in episode one.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, there were so many like stunts and special effects that couldn't really have been replicated if it was live action.
Yeah.
So what's your theory on that?
Well, so I made this point too, that watching episode one with Peggy just kicking ass all over the place, I thought, whoa, this is really cool to watch because this is looking at a hero with the powers of Captain America that we know in the films, but in animation, just like in the comics, so much more is achievable, just like what we were talking about with The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. So much more is achievable in animation than in real life, believably on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really loved all the action, just like you, that Peggy was doing. At the same time, I was also going, whoa, she's way more powerful than we've seen Captain America be in the films.
Right.
But that's totally fine. That's beside the point. I liked seeing the extremes of what a Captain America figure can do. And that's something that animation can give to us that film can't. On the flip side of that, in episode two, I had the opposite feeling of, wow, this is too much. There are no stakes. Everyone is just jumping and flipping all over the place. Benicio del Toro's character has crazy abs and is a giant muscle man. I just went, okay, this is when animation becomes so ridiculous.
Yeah.
They were in space and they could do anything they wanted, so they did anything they wanted. And I really didn't like episode two because I was like, this is a mess.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's not going to surprise anyone who's listened to even one other episode of our podcast that the Guardians universe is not one I love to live in. So taking one of my favorite characters that we've met so far in T'Challa and putting him into the Guardians, it didn't work because tonally they're so different. Chadwick Boseman, wonderful actor, but he's got a different tone. And T'Challa is a different kind of energy.
Yes, I agree.
And it didn't really fit within the vibe of what we know the Guardians universe to kind of be like.
I really like the thought experiment of what if a Wakandan kid, T'Challa, is taken by the Ravagers by accident. Great, that's a really cool thought experiment, but it just veered off into so many wild tangents. And it was nothing but rampant fan service everywhere. Every single line that anybody said was referencing something of a prior film.
Now, do you feel like it flatters your intelligence or do you think it's kind of lowest common denominator when they do that?
It panders. That was an example of pandering fan service that makes me feel like, no, I don't need this. I don't need you to give me a joke every 2 seconds to make me feel good for watching what you've already made.
Yeah, for me, who's only seen every film once so far, I was playing catch up and going, I think I've seen that before, but it's animated now, so I can't really tell. And in episode three, obviously, like, I feel like I've retained more of those films that were being kind of referenced in episode three there with the opening scene with Tony Stark and with Thor coming to get the hammer and
U of T
being featured in the Hulk thing. It's weird, though, for Hulk's love interests to meet.
Right.
Because it kind of feels like Liv Tyler's character was ditched after that Hulk film.
Yeah.
Like, we never hear about her again? Or did they reference her at all?
No, Betty's never referenced again.
Okay. So, yeah, it was interesting for then Natasha to also be there.
And on the point of fan service, episode 3 did it really well because it just presented scenes as we had seen them. But it didn't reference them in a cheeky way. It just put us into those scenes and then had the scenes deviate from what we knew had happened in the films. And so what was fun about episode 3 and why it was my favorite is it had me looking for, okay, what are the differences? Why are these differences happening? I'm trying to figure out the mystery with Fury. And then when Black Widow is in the archives and she gets attacked by this invisible force, I'm going, who has abilities who can do this? Is it telepathy? Is she being punched? Oh, she's being punched around by something small. And then she says, hope. It's all about hope. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
We're in Ant-Man territory. Like, that was fun because it laid out breadcrumbs for me to follow instead of going, look over here. You've seen this movie before.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I think that episode 1 or 3 were my favorite. Episode 2 was hard to get through for me. And it was strange to me that, I mean, I guess it makes sense. All you need is Chadwick Boseman to stop Thanos from carrying out his master plan.
Oh, yeah. If Peter Quill doesn't become Star-Lord, the whole universe is better for it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what we're saying here.
Yes.
If he just works at Dairy Queen, because that's what that was referencing at the end, yeah. Right? Where
his dad was coming to pick him up.
And who plays his dad?
Kurt Russell.
Okay, we're jumping all over the place, but it was hard for my heart to hear our beloved Bradley Whitford being so misogynistic.
Oh, I know.
And, like, he doesn't really have, like, redemption either. He kind of has, like, a little comeuppance moment, but he never, like, changes his tune.
Yeah.
We love him. Lemon Lyman.
Come on. Give him a real part in a Marvel film.
Truly.
Make him, like, Uncle Ben in Spider-Man or something.
But isn't he already dead?
Yeah, but flashbacks.
Oh, flashbacks. For sure, for sure. Who's the Watcher? Because he was very present in episode 3 and hadn't been present in 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. He's a character in the comics.
Okay.
I don't know too much about him, but he does what he says. And he sort of collects stories.
Hmm.
So I wonder if he's going to become a bigger presence.
I heard echoes of the different scores in there as well.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is nice, because if this was truly like fan fiction that was created outside of Marvel's jurisdiction, they couldn't use the real music. So it was nice to hear little echoes here and there.
Yeah. Laura Karpman is the composer for it. And I think she has maybe my dream job. Because
truly,
you get to work on these little half-hour vignettes telling Marvel stories that, of course, have to include all of the Marvel scores that we know, all of the familiar themes, but also coming up with new things. So taking elements of the familiar themes and then turning them into something brand new. I would love to do that.
Oh, yeah. You would do that for free.
I would do the first one for free as a proof of concept. And then I would say, pay me money now. I think she's doing great. I love it. It's just enough homage. Like, as soon as a scene shifts to some character or some landscape or some location that is familiar, she gives us a little sting of whatever is familiar from that film. And then we move on to something else. It's great. I really enjoy her work.
Mm. Anyway, on to the next ones.
Hey, let me tell you though.
What?
My biggest takeaway from this?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to get a Captain Carter costume.
Ooh. Save it for later.
I think you look so good in that costume.
Oh, thank you. With the Union Jack?
Yeah.
I mean, I already do the victory rolls in my hair sometimes.
There you go.
So.
I mean, you and Hayley Atwell are definitely the same kind of hit.
Oh, thanks.
But I think you would also hit in the same kind of way.
It would mean so much to us if you could leave us a rating and a review on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at MCU and Me Podcast. So tell your friends. Thanks!